Continuing in Mitzvah Shin Yud Gimel 313, which is the mitzvah to fast on the 10th day of Tishrei, which is what we know as Yom Kippur. And we were discussing the fact that we have shiurim for eating on Yom Kippur, that the shiur for eating, again, it's prohibited midaraisa to eat and drink even the tiniest amount on Yom Kippur. But one does not receive the penalty, the punishment of kares or malchus, if that's relevant, unless one eats for food the shear of kakoseves hagasa, which is a fat date, and for drink, a fat date. And the shear for drinking is melo lugmav, which goes by each person, but we assume that in the amount of a kibetza, that's definitely going to have a melo lugmav for the average person, so that's a good estimation of a melo lugmav, the size of an olive, which we said, size of an egg, which we pointed out last time, is about 50 milliliters. Well, lefikach continues the sefer achinuch. Mi shehu chole, a sick person on Yom Kippur, afal pi she'ein bo sakona gimura, even if he's not really in danger of his life, im yecholush harbe roi lahachilo lashkoso me'at me'at kashir she'amarnu, that we have a principle in Yom Kippur, that machilin oso hakal hakal tchila, that when somebody needs to eat on Yom Kippur, so you're supposed to assess that person's needs, and if it's enough for the person to have something less forbidden, so you give that to that person first, and then you increase to something more forbidden. So for example, if you have, let's say, in front of you on Yom Kippur, an ill person, and the person says, I have to eat right now. There's no question, I just have to eat, or you know, I'm going to be in mortal danger. So you have in front of you either a nice kosher steak or a pork chop. So you say, maybe you want the kosher steak now. No, I have to have the pork chop. So the person says, I have to have the pork chop. So you give him the pork chop. But you prefer to give the less forbidden thing first. So the same thing goes with the Surim of Yom Kippur per se, that there are, even though it's forbidden midaraisa to eat even the tiniest amount on Yom Kippur, since you don't receive the penalty, so we consider it better, if at all possible, for you to eat less than the amount for which you would receive the penalty of kares. Obviously, you're not going to receive the penalty of kares anyway, because you're eating this food with heter, with a permission to do so. It's not forbidden. But nevertheless, that's considered hakal hakal tchila, that less than a shear is considered more lenient than more than a shear. Yeah?
Wait a minute. Is this one of
these? That is true.
Of course, presumably, if you're in the state where you have to be fed intravenously, then, you know, you have a heter to
eat. Correct. You know, if a person is ill and the options are, you know, stay at home and eat normally, or, you know, we could take you to the hospital before Yom Kippur, start up an IV, and we'll feed you intravenously, and then you won't need to eat on Yom Kippur. So in general, in halacha, we assume we do not need to go to those lengths, and we can go according to the normal course of events, just because there's this new technology available that... Right, but if somebody is on an IV, let's somebody...
It's not a chila, in other words, right?
Right, it's not a chila at all. It's, you know...
A chila.
Eating. And technically, again, it's hard to imagine someone who is not a chola at all that would be on an IV during Yom Kippur, so... If for some reason someone would have an IV during Yom Kippur, and then it'll be mutter. Mm-hmm. It's mutter for a healthy person to have sugar water by an IV on Yom Kippur. That's not a problem. But again, it's hard to imagine how that would be the case. In general, halacha, you don't have to resort to technological things in order to be yotzei the mitzvah. I mean, in order to perform what the halacha requires. If you're allowed to eat on Yom Kippur, you're allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. There are stories of some great tzaddikim who towards the end of their lives, they were ill on Yom Kippur, and they just couldn't handle the idea of eating on Yom Kippur, so therefore they arranged for an IV. Okay, but there's some great tzaddikim who didn't do that also, so it depends on each person's individual nitiya. Again, it's not halachically required at all, no matter how religious you are, but I'm just telling you that by way of illustration, that there were some people who, in fact, did this. You know, Rav Soloveitchik was known as someone who just, Yom Kippur was his favorite day of the year. He loved Yom Kippur. You know, there was I don't know if he actually did this IV thing, but he just couldn't handle the idea of eating Yom Kippur, even if there were certain times, you know, later in life when he was still with it. Again, and towards the very end of his life, he wasn't very much with it, but when he was still with it, you know, and maybe he would have had a hetzer to eat on Yom Kippur, he just couldn't handle the idea of eating on Yom Kippur. Again, if he had really put himself in sakana, then that would have been a real problem, but you know, he thought that it would be okay to take the risk, so he did it. Again, that's not not something that we recommend.
Don't
but
try this at home.
Right, but it's, you know, he says that also, you know, after Yom Kippur was over, he couldn't eat for hours after Yom Kippur because he was still on such a high. You know, he would just be sitting at the table, you know, sitting in the living room, just singing to himself the tunes of Ne'ilah, because he felt so close to God during that time. He didn't feel like, you know, he wanted to break it by returning to mundane life. So he was really into Yom Kippur. Okay, it's a darga. Okay, again, I said we have some people have something like that. It's towards the end of Yom Kippur, you have a little bit of a high, but to go hours just continuing singing the songs of Ne'ilah and not being able to eat anything.
That's coming from inside. That's
right.
That's not something imposed on the outside, or you think, oh my God, I have to live up to these musarniks or whatever. This is burbling up from you. It's genuine.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. 100%. Okay, so the Sefer HaChinuch says that if somebody is very weak, but they don't really need to eat such large amounts, so if somebody is very weak and there's maybe a concern that if they become weaker, then they will get to the state of being very ill, dangerously ill, but they're not dangerously ill right now, so then you give them the less than a shear. We know that in halacha, eating, one act of eating is not considered one unified act unless it takes place within the span of kidei achilas pras, the amount of time that it takes to eat a loaf of bread. Because it's not a small amount of bread, but if basically the shear is that, you know, you're sitting, reclining, eating this bread with a nice dip, and without undue pause, how long it would take you to eat a bread that had the volume. So there are different opinions about how long this shear is, just like any shear on halacha. So the opinions basically range from, what would you say? How long would it take to eat a bread of that size? You're pretty much on. So the estimates range from 2 to 9 minutes. So the 2 minute shear is a little too short. The 9 minute shear is too long, and the shear that most poskim assume is the shear me'ikar hadin is approximately 4 minutes. Okay, so in other words, if you eat on Yom Kippur less than kizayis at what time is it now? At 9 o'clock, and then you eat another less than kizayis at 9:15. Then you're not going to receive the penalty of Karis or Malkus because the two amounts that you ate don't join together into one shear. Yom Kippur is Kesevas Agasa. If you eat less than a shear 15 minutes apart, then it doesn't join together. However, if you ate a shear at 9:01, half a shear at 9:01, and then you ate another half a shear at 9:03, then that would be considered that you ate the full shear, and you would receive the penalty. So when we actually go with the practically, when somebody needs to eat on Yom Kippur and they're eating less than a shear, so if at all possible, we try to use the most machmir shear of 9 minutes, that if possible, so you should eat your less than a shear with more than 9 minutes intervening between each eating. If that's not possible, so then we rely on the Ikar Adin Shir of 4 or 5 minutes, something like that. But again, the Shiurim, like we pointed out last time, for other purposes of the Torah and Yom Kippur, they work in, you want to be Machmir in the opposite direction. So in other words, for example, for eating matzah on Pesach. So on Pesach, you're required to eat a Kizayis of matzah. And of course, one is required to eat the Kizayis of matzah within the span of Kedei Achilas Pras. Otherwise, the eating doesn't join together, right? So on Pesach, so lechatchila, you could be machmir on the lowest shear of 2 minutes. Again, with my shear of kizayis, it's not very difficult at all to eat a kizayis of matzah within the span of 2 minutes. But then, even then, again, if you can only manage to eat a kizayis of matzah within the span of 4 or 5 minutes, then you can still make the bracha, you can still be considered as having eaten it. And if you have no choice, you rely on the shear of 9 minutes, but that's very, very difficult. And potentially you would not even make a bracha if you cannot eat a kezayis and matzah within the span of 4 or 5 minutes. You would not rely on the shear of 9 minutes to the extent of making a bracha, because, as we said, it's quite difficult.
How did they find the length of time that is equivalent to 9 minutes when there were no watches?
It's an approximation.
There were, you know, first of all, they had clocks of all sorts. You know,
not clocks that could tell the difference between 9 minutes.
I mean, they had sundials. They used, in the times of Chazal, they used sundials, but this doesn't go by sundials.
No, you had clocks that could be accurate to within a minute, certainly. That's not mechanical clocks.
But these are all approximations. We're not have to, you don't also, have to be
also,
so accurate.
Also have,
in a second.
By the way, you also have things like, for example, you know, like a
hourglass.
Yeah, an hourglass. And so forth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So, you know, it was known how.
You could probably mark the hourglass.
Was it a minute or something like that?
Yes, but nobody sat there, at least not until contemporary times. Yeah. Nobody sat there at the Seder with a watch looking at your, you know, how many, minutes you took to eat your matzah. Also, because that the Poskim say that even this might not be lechatchila. That lechatchila, you should swallow the entire kezayis at one time. You shouldn't even rely on the kedei achilas pras at all. And again, with my size kezayis, well, it's really the size of an olive, and you have, especially in the olden days when they had soft matzah, so to eat an olive-sized piece of soft matzah, chew it up and swallow in one swallow, is not particularly difficult at all. First of all, even with our matzah nowadays, and the real shear of a kezayis, it's pretty easy to do that in one swallow. But Rosh Shlomo Zalman said that nowadays, since we have harder matzah, so it's not even considered, if you want to have a big shear of a kezayis, and you want to be machmer on this to swallow it all in one gulp, he says that doesn't make any sense. You know, some people, you know, they fill their cheeks with matzah because they wanted a huge shear of a kezayis, and then they attempt to swallow it all at one in one gulp to be machmer on all the shittas, which Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, if you do that, you're not yotzei the mitzvah of matzah, because it's not considered derech achila. It's not a way of eating, so therefore you're not yotzei. That's why Rosh Shlomo Zalman says nowadays lechatchila, even if you all have a bigger shear of kezayis, you just eat it bit by bit without pausing, and that would be okay. But again, b'dieved, post facto, so even if you had the shear within the span of a period of kedei achilas pras, then that is perfectly acceptable.
Is there any difference on Yom Kippur with the challah between eating and drinking? I mean, I don't know.
So what do you mean?
Would it be preferable to like just give them a drink of water or a drink of juice as opposed
water
to...
Water on Yom Kippur is the same challah Yom Kippur as eating ribs. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's no difference. There's no distinction between, as far as that's concerned. You're right. That's why if somebody needs to drink on Yom Kippur, but in other words, if somebody needs nutrients on Yom Kippur and just water isn't sufficient, so that's why, you know, instead of saying, you know, drink water and eat food, so drink Gatorade if that's sufficient for you. So that's one act of desecration of Yom Kippur, so to speak, instead of two different ones. Okay. I mean, there might be, a sort of hashkafic thing that, you know, if you're already having to violate Yom Kippur because of your health issues, so better not do something that's so enjoyable. You know what I mean?
Is not enjoyable.
If you could manage with water, so, you know, if your doctor says like you just need to eat or drink something, so if you could manage with either water or you could say, well, if I'm already eating a little bit, so I might as well have a little piece of steak instead of, so it's not proper hashkafa for Yom Kippur because you're trying to represent yourself as being, you know, still with as much as possible within the normal hanaga of Kal Yisrael now that we don't eat and drink in Yom Kippur. It's like on Tisha B'Av. If you have to eat on Tisha B'Av, so then you don't eat, or on any of the fast days, so you're not supposed to
eat luxuriously.
Right, you're not supposed to eat luxuriously, exactly. You're supposed to eat basic foods. As a matter of hashkafa, but it's not, again, in terms of the technical chilul Yom Kippur, it's really the same.
It's not nice.
Yeah. It was actually, my wife once, on a fast day, so she has a mentor in her company. So her mentor, they're both from.
Oh.
And it happened to be that at the time, so my wife was pregnant and her mentor was nursing. Oh. So neither of them were fasting on the minor fast days. So they made up to meet on the on one of the minor fast days, you know, and then they made an appointment, a meeting at a restaurant, and then afterwards they realized it was a fast day. Mm-hmm. So neither of them were actually fasting, but I told her that even so, even if they're neither of them are fasting, it's still not appropriate to go out to eat in a restaurant on a fast day.
If you cross the date line, or you go, let's say, to Europe on a fast day, whose timing do you have to observe as far as the fast is concerned?
You go by the timing wherever you are. So if you fly from America to Europe on a fast day, you get your fast shorter. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And it's very inadvisable to fly from Israel to the United States on a fast day because you made
I actually did this. So when 2 years ago, I'm sorry, 3 years ago, when my wife and I went on a winter vacation to Europe, so we booked the ticket back, and then we discovered afterwards it was Asara Batavis. Mm-hmm. That our flight back was on Asara Batavis from Europe to America. So actually, at that point, that's what my wife was expecting the first time, actually, during that trip, very early on. So she wasn't fasting, so she didn't care. But I ended up fasting Asara Batavis for about 18 hours. But you're only awake. Right. I was awake for those entire 18 hours. Oh, so gosh. Most fast to be awake. Again, okay, you survive. By the time you get into it, it's just like traveling already, you know, makes you feel off. So it was already just felt a little more off. You know, again, it's not ideal, but, you know, it was manageable.
At the beginning of at the same time that the people end their fast, where you are when you end the fast. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Your halachic times always go by where you are, except the Shavuos thing, which we discussed last time, which, again, most post-games still hold that it goes by where you are. But Shabbos and Yantif and fast days always go by where you are. Yeah. You don't get... You don't get akula by, I flew out from Israel to America on the fast day, and they're already ending the fast in Israel, so, you know, I can, no, it goes by where you are. Halachic times always goes by where you are. By that same token, you could say if you were born in Israel, so you should always observe Shabbos at the time that Shabbos is in Israel. You'll be in the middle of the day on Friday. Oh, I'm already Shabbos, I'm having my Friday night meal now. That doesn't make any sense. You always go by where you are. So if you're going to fly from Israel, you should always fly from west to east on fast days if you want your fast day to be shorter. And that goes for anything. Yeah, that goes for any halachic times. Goes by Shiva Nikiyam also, that if a woman flies from west to east during the Shiva Nikiyam, so she can go to the mikvah, you'll have less total time in terms of hours of nidus than you would otherwise. Okay. Yeah. Fine. So the Sefer Chinuch continues. Shehein shalosh beitzim kedas rov mefarshim. I'm sorry. So most poskim say that kedechilas pras is a roll, a piece of bread the size of three eggs, and some say four eggs. Kedei shelo yitzdarfu achilos v'tienech sheves kachil achas v'shir echad. So if you ate within less of a time span of that, then you would, the two eatings would combine into one, and you would be considered to have eaten kashir, and you would have defeated the purpose of eating less than a shir on Yom Kippur. And according to the Sefer Achinuch, I keep going. Avabein ha'achila v'ashtia ain't sarech lahafsik, but you're allowed to, if you need to both eat and drink, so you're allowed to eat and drink a little bit, then wait the amount of time to, and then eat and drink again. Because, in other words, the drinking and eating are counted differently. Mm-hmm. So just because drinking the shir is a malolugmav and eating the shir is a date. Mm-hmm. So if you ate a tiny bit of food and you drank a little bit, but the drinking, the amount that you drank would put you over the edge to a koseves agasa, it doesn't matter because drinking has no shaykhis to koseves agasa. Okay? So eating and drinking is counted separately, so you can eat a little bit and drink a little bit, even if together those two things would be more than one of the shiurim, it doesn't matter. V'shir shebein shtia l'shtia kedei shtias revias. The Sefer Achinuch holds that the shiur between drinking, however, is much less than kedei achilas pras. It's kedei shtias revias, the amount of time it takes to drink a revias, 75 milliliters, 2.6 ounces. How long does it take to... drink 2.6 ounces.
Double seconds.
So according to the Sefer HaChinuch, you could drink half a melol ugmav. Wait, be super machmir, 30 seconds, 1 minute, drink more. Wait another 1 minute, drink a little more, drink more. And then that would be okay. However, according to many, many poskim, the shear for drinking is a kedei achilas pras as well, and therefore one would need to wait several minutes between the acts of drinking and not just between the acts of eating. So we try to be machmir for this, if at all possible, and the person will not get more ill by waiting the extra time in between the drinkings. And this is relevant also for what we were talking about last time regarding Kiddush, that when you drink the shear for Kiddush, so you have to drink it within the prescribed amount of time. That according to many poskim, you would have to drink the shear. Again, if you would want to go to Chumrah regarding Kiddush in the opposite direction, that you would want to drink the shear for Kiddush in the amount of time of Kiddush Dias Revius. So that's not so long. So when you make Kiddush, you should drink the Melol Lugmav, which again, most people is a Rov Revius. It's about an ounce and a half. So you make sure to drink an ounce and a half without undue pause. You try to drink it. You know, you could take a couple sips without really significantly pausing in between, but you're supposed to drink the amount within the time of Kadesh Dias Revius. But b'di'evit, if you didn't do that, then you would have till the amount of time of Kadesh Achilas Pras. You could rely on the opinions that you have a Kadesh Achilas Pras for drinking also, and if you drank a Melugmav for Kiddush without the time of within the time of Kadesh Achilas Pras, which is several minutes. 3 or 4 minutes, three, four, 5 minutes, so then one would not need to make Kiddush again.
So it's not really worth it to have first-rate wine for Kiddush, then?
It's not really worth it.
If you don't have to gulp it down.
You won't even taste it.
You taste it. Sometimes I enjoyed my sip for Kiddush, even if it's a good quality wine. You have to drink it pretty fast. Again, you can't swirl in your glass and take a little sip and, you know, stick your nose in and smell and enjoy all the aromas of the wine. But, yeah, it depends. The problem really is, actually, that the problem with not using good wine for Kiddush is that sometimes the good wines are more mehudar for Kiddush. Because we know that there are opinions that the wine for Kiddush is supposed to be not mevushal. We know that there are opinions that the wine is supposed to have no added sugars. We know that there are opinions that the wine is supposed to be red. So a dry red wine is in many ways, it's not mevushal, is the most mehudar type of wine for Kiddush. So again, a lot of people, Beshita, they'd make Kiddush on sweet wine, and then if they like dry wine, they bring the dry wine out for the meal. So again, but we paskin, when push comes to shove, we paskin that you could use white, you could use sweet, you could use not mevushal wine for Kiddush. But you know, it just bothers me with thinking halachically, that if you have on the table, you have the sweet wine and you have the dry wine, even if the red wine is more expensive and you do have to take a small gulp, so maybe you won't enjoy it as much for that one sip. But if you think halachically, then you think, oh, I'm not going to pass up making Kiddush on the more mehudar wine in order to save it, you know, for the meal. It depends because, and there is also an Inyan of Yistam using a nicer wine for it to honor the mitzvah of Kiddush, even without these purely halachic considerations. So that's something to consider also, that if you're using, that's not a good wine. If you're using sweet Rashi wine for Kiddush, and then during the meal you're bringing out a $75 bottle of wine, so that's a little bit of a slap in the face. Again, if you really don't enjoy it, that's one thing, and you can't stand just gulping it for Kiddush, at least a couple sips. So that's one thing, but it's a little bit of slap in the face to Kiddush if you enjoy the more mehudar wine for Kiddush. So it's a little bit of for the covet of Kiddush to use a wine that you really don't like for Kiddush and save the good wine for during the meal. Yeah. It also depends, when I make Kiddush, how many people I have drinking. So if I know I have a whole table of real drinkers, and if I gulp a revius of wine at the beginning of the meal, so there might not be enough wine for everyone. So that's a different story. Then I might use a cheaper wine for Kiddush. But if just me and my family for Kiddush, so I don't need the whole bottle to myself. So you can if I gulp a few sips at the beginning, so I'll still have plenty of glasses for myself and immediate family members during Kiddush. So there are a lot of considerations regarding this, but all these things are important to keep in mind, the halachic and the hashkafic aspect. So if you want to be machmir, again, I mentioned last time also that lechatchila it's proper to drink not just a melolugmav when you first make kiddush, but a full revius. And again, even if your cup is much bigger, you would just have to drink a revius, which is 75 milliliters, 2.6 ounces. So if that's the case, and you have to drink a revius in a kiddush ds revius, then you really have to drink it fast. Okay, you don't have to. You shouldn't struggle with it, but without undue pause. You don't have to make yourself crazy with the times, but that was my lesson in the Pesach guide when I was talking about how fast you're supposed to drink the four cups. I said the four cups should be drunk without undue pause. So you see, sometimes people with the Arba Kosas on Pesach, they're not used to drinking wine, perhaps, or in certain cases that they're on a diet, so they have limited caloric allotment, so they don't want to allot themselves they don't want to drink a whole cup of wine. They rather just take a tiny sip because they don't want to waste their calories on the wine, which again is hashgafically highly problematic. But they just take a little tiny sip and then put the cup down, and maybe several minutes later you take another tiny sip. So you're not yotze that bagozos. You're not yotze with just a tiny sip.
Even if ultimately you do drink a revius.
If you drink. Well, you don't have to drink a revius of the four cups. The chatchila maybe, but again, b'dievet, a rov revius would be sufficient. Most of a revius, so about an ounce and a half, would be sufficient. But you have to drink an ounce. To drink an ounce and a half within 4 minutes or so. That's the. If you don't do that, then you're really not yotze the four cups, and it's very important to do that. So you have to. I once noticed that one of my. That wasn't the case here, first, surely not. But even so, you can't handle wine, so you should drink grape juice. You have to drink something. And grape juice maybe has more of a caloric punch. Okay, you have to figure out what your priorities are that you have to drink. Unless it's really going to make you very ill. So you have to drink a beverage that's kosher for the four cups. You have to drink an ounce and a half within 4 minutes. There's nothing.
By diluting it with water.
You could do it with water, yeah.
So you could really get rid of a lot of the calories by just.
Correct. Yeah.
Diluting
the wine.
Grape juice. Some poskim say that since grape juice loses its significant taste more quickly than wine does, so you have less than traditionally. It says that you can dilute wine, even 1 in 4, or some say even 1 in 6. So you can dilute wine. The normal method was 1 in 4, one part wine to 3 parts. Water, and that was the way they used to drink wine in the olden days. So people say that nowadays, since we're not used to drinking wine that way, so you have to have at least rove wine. You have to have 51% pure wine, and the rest could be water. That's one thing, okay. And then some say though that for grape juice we should be even more machmer, because if you make a beverage that's 51% grape juice. So then it's really not barely going to taste like grape juice anymore, even less than the wine. Okay, that's not so clear. It should be that wine and grape juice would be the same. But yeah, if you'd use, I would say, certainly 3/4 grape juice and 1/4 wine, so you're good. Yeah. I mean, sorry, 1/4 water. then you're good. But yeah, you could use water. It has to be a method that you like to drink it. If you can't stand watered down wine, so you should drink pure wine. If you can't stand pure wine, so you should drink it watered down a little bit. So it should be it's an important thing with Kiddush and four cups is they have to remember that these mitzvahs are basically supposed to be enjoyed. They're supposed to be, the point of these mitzvahs, and Kiddush especially, is to call your attention to the holiness of Shabbos. Why did Chazal tell us we're supposed to make Kiddush on wine? Because people enjoy drinking wine. So when they have a cup of wine in their hand and they make the bracha, sanctifying Shabbos, they're going to pay it extra attention and be extra happy about sanctifying Shabbos. So if you hate wine, and that defeats the purpose of the mitzvah of Kiddush. Then you should use grape juice or whatever or a different type of wine that you do prefer. Or you make Kiddush on bread if you really really can't stand any type of wine or grape juice. So we have a concept of making Kiddush on bread, which again we try not to do lechatchila. But push comes to shove, if you have no wine or you don't like wine, so you make Kiddush on bread.
How about Abdullah?
Oh, you can't make Abdullah on bread.
What
are the
restrictions on what you can make
Havdalah
on?
Havdalah is more lenient than Kiddush. Havdalah technically you can make on something called Chamar Medina, which is different shittas about exactly what it is, but it's to summarize, it's a normal Choshev beverage in that place. Some say it's what has to be most of the drinking of that place is that beverage. Some say it's
orange juice.
Yeah, according to some, orange juice is coming out with you. Yeah, according to some, orange juice in America, especially since everybody drinks orange juice. So coffee, tea, potentially could be Khamar Medina. But it's questionable, highly questionable, whether such a thing really is Khamar Medina at all in America, because, A, there's many beverages that people drink. There's no one khush of beverage. So I said that maybe in...
Coca-Cola.
In
Coca-Cola.
A Coke is not so pusha because Coca-Cola. It's just flavored water.
Oh, really?
There's not even any...
So is coffee.
Well, tea and coffee, there is Bischel. It's a cooked, so it takes on a new, you know, if that's,
beer.
If you go with that, so, you know, wine is also, chemically, it's mostly water. If you don't
some
go, you,
beer,
you
some, most
right,
of
beer wine. Also, right, in Akinami. So beer, that's true, it's fermented. So you put the water in with the mashed grains, and the fermentation creates a new chalos that it's not just water anymore. But Coca-Cola is literally you just water and you stick in some flavorings. So there's no cooking, there's no fermentation, there's no process that creates it into a more chush of important beverage than just water.
Nah, it's just simply what is what society views as being
Well, there's more than one. So according in America, so again, there are shitas that are lenient. But I'm saying, according to some shitas, since there, it's not like in Japan, where sake is the, the alcoholic beverage or the chasha beverage, doesn't necessarily need to be alcoholic. It's not like, certain parts of Germany where beer is the beverage. You know, certain parts of Germany drink wine. Okay, but it's different. It's different. And also some say that the whole din of Khamar Medina only comes into play when there is literally no access to wine.
Mm-hmm.
So here, there is, some say it has to do with how far the wine grows away from the city. So here, so in certain cities where wine doesn't grow so close, so maybe there's a din of Khamar Medina anyway, again. But because of all these problems, you know, especially here in New York, in many places, you know, Kedem wine is probably available in every state in the U.S. Kedem, grape juice at least, right? So if you have the stores awash, everywhere you look, every wash with wine and grape juice galore. So according to many shitas, there's no din of Khamar Medina. That's why I feel very strongly that in Eretz Yisrael, America, at least in places where there's people drink wine, at least for ritual purposes, and there's wine readily available, and there's no one competing beverage. So because there are all these problems with the din of Khamar Medina, then one should not ever make Havdalah, or Kiddush Shabbos morning, for that matter, for those who matter Kiddush Shabbos morning too, on Khamar Medina.
Is there any minimum volume required?
The same as for the wine, Revius.
That's
why another problem with using, in places where, for example, in Scotland, so if there's not really wine in Scotland, or it's just imported, and it's not really readily available, so you can make a strong argument that maybe Scotch. It's Khamar Medina in Scotland.
Sure.
Then you have a problem because then you have to have a revius and you have to drink a malalugma of all the dinim apply. You could water it down a little, yeah.
Scotch and soda.
Right, you could water it down. That's true. You could. You could. You could water it down. It's a good point. Some people say a kula that since the derech is to drink it in the smaller cup, therefore you can go with a smaller shear.
How can that work? I mean, the revius or revius. I mean, you can.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Oh, wow.
You can't. Revius isn't relative to.
You're right. Yeah, it's a problem, but that's what a lot of people rely on when they make this the kiddush on these beverages Shabbos morning. But I think you shouldn't make the kiddush on these beverages to begin with. But we have a saving grace, which is that if you make kiddush and shul on scotch, and then you go home and make again before your meal on wine, so basically that indicates that your kiddush before that you made in shul is not your real kiddush for the day, and your real kiddush for Shabbos morning is when you go home for the meal and you make it on wine, so therefore it's not so problematic that you made kiddush before on a questionable beverage.
And then you shouldn't have had any mizonos, though.
I mean, there are many rishonim that hold that you're allowed to eat before kiddush Shabbos morning.
Mm-hmm.
That it's only Friday night and that you're not allowed to eat before kiddush. So, betziruv of the fact that you did make some sort of kiddush on the scotch or whatever beverage you used, and that you're going to make a real kiddush again later, so betzir of those two things, then It's not so bad. It's not so bad.
Is there a halachic requirement to make kiddush at least twice? In other words, once Friday night and once Shabbos morning?
Yeah.
The Friday night doesn't cover Shabbos morning?
No, no. No. It's a special takana. You're supposed to make kiddush before your first meal on Shabbos morning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Lemaisa, again, there are people that Motze Pesach make Havdalah on beer because they say, you know, this is we've been longing for beer for 8 days. So this is give most kavod to the mitzvah of Havdalah that we make it on beer on Motze Pesach. We're going to give extra chshivas to the mitzvah of Havdalah. So I think that's not...
Run out and what? Buy it. Right.
Yeah. You can run out and buy it. Or you sold it. You had some...
Awesome.
Maybe you put it in the fridge. Maybe you put you sell the goy your fridge, and you have nice cold beer immediately, right after
Warm
Pesach.
Beer is better than no beer.
No. Fine, but that I also feel is not correct. And again, no matter what the circumstances, again, unless you have absolutely zero wine grape juice available, I believe strongly that all ritual blessings should be conducted over wine or grape juice nowadays, and not over any other beverage.
And also, if you make a havdalah. The week of Tisha B'Av.
Yeah, wine.
Wine.
Okay. Nachman Medina. Mm-hmm. I hold wine for during the 9 days also.
Rabbi, did you say at the beginning before I came in why wine was chosen in the first place?
No, because we're not actually talking about the Kiddush right now. We're talking about Yom Kippur. It makes you happy. It makes you people. It draws your attention to the mitzvah of Kiddush. Okay, fine. So, umutar, says the Sefer HaChinuch, umutar lishkol ulishayer dvarim eile b'yom HaKippur. Oh, the one exception, by the way, I should just say before I continue, the one exception to my no chamar medina rule is what? What's the one exception? Benching.
Oh.
If you want to use a kos for benching, you could use chamar medina. It's a tziruf of two things. Why? First of all, there are many Rishonim that hold that even if a beverage is not Chamar Medina, if you drank it during the meal, you're allowed to use it as the kos for benching. Hmm. So let's say even if orange juice is not Chamar Medina, which maybe it is in America, maybe not, which is why I think you shouldn't use it, Lemaisa. But let's say orange juice is Chamar Medina, it is not Chamar Medina in America, yet you chose to drink it throughout the meal. Therefore, you, according to that shita, you could use it as the kos for benching, even if it's not Chamar Medina, even if it's not wine. That's one thing. And second of all, the kos for Birkas HaMazon does not involve any bracha levatola. If you make Havdalah over a wrong beverage, so not only are you not Yotze Havdalah, but you made a bracha levatola. The Hamavdil Ben Kodesh Lechol is a bracha levatola because your Havdalah was incorrect. So, but by the kos of benching, there's no chashash bracha levatola because you finished your meal, you made benching, and now you have to make a, you want to drink a cup of orange juice, so you make a shakal. There's no bracha levatala over here. There's not a shail of not being yotze kiddush or havdalah. So therefore, it's better than nothing, because there's a chashuv a mitzvah in benching al hakos. A lot of people, prefer to do without, but it's a lot of shittas hold that you're really supposed to do it. It's better to make the kosher bracha on a beverage that's not chamar medina, that might not be chamar medina, rather than not have the kos at all. So, to have a nice hot, if you're drinking tea towards the end of the meal, so you pour yourself another cup of tea and you say benching on it. Again, the minhag is not to bench with a kos if you have less than a zimun, although maybe with another beverage you could. Maybe the hakpada is only with wine, but whatever it is, so that's the one exception, that you can use something, a different beverage for kos shel bracha for birkas hamazon, even if it's not chamar medina, but for any other thing, one should use either wine or grape juice. Okay. Umutar lishkol l'shar dvarim elu b'yom hakipurim le'is hatzorech. And one may measure out these things on Yom Kippur when required. Mutav nachosh v'narchik shalolechol shir. So normally on Shabbos and Yontif, you're not allowed to measure and weigh things. But nevertheless, if you have to measure it out, so better you should violate the rabbinic ordinance against measuring things and not come close to violating
the eating more than a shear. So it's better. You should make sure you have less than a shear and violate the prohibition against measuring.
Is it,
yeah?
Measuring and weighing are equivalent in this? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, but so many things. What about, like, all of the, you know, the little charts they have for how big a piece of matzah you should have and all the, you know.
Well, some people weigh it to try to get a more precise determination of the shear. The shear is technically in volume and not in weight, but if you know the density, then you can.
Even measuring something like, say, volume or something like that.
How much less? How much?
Yeah,
no, for tzorich mitzvah, you're allowed to measure.
Tzorich mitzvah, okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
But here, again, if possible, you should measure out your little bits of food and little bits of drink before Yom Kippur, but if that's not possible, so it's better you should make sure that you drink less than a shear than be so worried about violating the prohibition against measuring on Yom Kippur.
If you figured out in a particular container or glass or whatever how much.
Yeah, that's better. That's better that to use a real measuring device.
Shot glass holds whatever, and just because I'm pouring it into a shot glass. Well,
no, you're right. That's better than. Right,
that's
right.
That's not measuring it. I'm pouring it into the
You're
shot
right,
glass.
Right. That's better
I
than. Yes.
That
you can also figure out for
now.
Yourself a Mali Lugma if you don't have to, you know, need an external measurement. So, yeah.
Yeah, but when you're figuring out how much to put in your mouth, so if you're doing it sort of post facto, so you're putting your drink, taking a sip of water. Whoops, that was more than a milligram. You know, that's not so ideal either. As you have, you should be able to measure it out before you put the liquid in your mouth. And the way the Sefer HaChinuch here presents the eating shiurim on Yom Kippur is very interesting. He seems to imply, as the Brisker Rav points out in his commentary on the Rambam, that this might be the basis of the psak of his father, Reb Chaim. So as is well known, so Reb Chaim Brisker used to tell all ill people, it says in Shulchan Aruch, it says in the Norman Poskim, just by way of preface, that if you are ill on Yom Kippur, dangerously ill, then you're supposed, if you can manage with just the shiurim, eating less than a shiur, then you should do that. If you can't, so you eat more. And the same thing too, if so that's what it says in most normative poskim. So Reb Chaim Brisker held differently. He used to paskin differently for people. Chaim Brisker held that if you're already considered to be dangerously ill, eat and drink as much as you want. Even if you think you can manage with less than a shear, you eat and drink as much as you want. What are the only time where you eat less than a shear? Is if you're not currently in the state of being dangerously ill, but we're worried that if you get weaker, then you could potentially get to the state of being dangerously ill. So then Reb Chaim says you should eat less than a shear. Whereas in the classical poskim, it says that even if you're currently dangerously ill and you can manage with less than a shear, you should still eat less than a shear.
Because you might not know that you could, you know, that you can't manage with using with just a shear until it's too late, right? You know.
I mean, it's obviously a little bit far-fetched, but that's what they asked Reb Chaim. Nu, Reb Chaim, you're so machmer in all the dinim, so on this you're so makel. He says, no, I'm machmer on pikuach nefesh.
Right.
This is just another manifestation of me being super machmer that I hold like this. So the Sefer HaChinuch, it sort of sounds like this, that it says, im yiyeh cholush harbe, I'm sorry, lefikach mishu chole afal pish ein bo sakana gimura, if you're a little ill, it's that point that if you're afraid he's going to get weaker, or he's very weak, then even if he's not really in danger, so you feed him the smaller shiurim. It sounds like even if he's already considered dangerously ill, so you feed him more than the shiur no matter what. You feed him whatever he needs. So again, the most poskim don't hold like that. The normative psak is that even if you're currently dangerously ill and you can manage with less than a shear, you should eat less than a shear. But there is this Brisker shita, which you normally think of as being a machmer. And again, it is machmer in their own way about pikuach nefesh. But there is this Brisker shita that if you're already considered dangerously ill, you eat and drink as much as you want. It's only if you're not currently dangerously ill and we're worried you're going to get weaker that we feed you less than the shear.
Somebody makes kiddush for a crowd.
Yeah.
Less than a shear, or drinks less than a shear, or uses the wrong liquid.
Yeah.
Does that invalidate the kiddush for the crowd as well?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a problem. That's why I said last time that if you're making kiddush for others, so you have to be extra careful. That you have to, you're all these other people that are relying on you. It's a problem. Mm-hmm. Also, Yeah, there are a lot of problems. It's a lot of problems. That's why people like to make their own kiddush sometimes when they go to people's houses. In Washington Heights, I haven't seen it so much. It really depends on the community. Mm-hmm. But I remember when I was a rabbinic intern in Highland Park, it was more of a thing there that everyone in Highland Park offers, when other people come to the house, they always offer people if they like to make their own kiddush. In Silver Spring, I think also a lot of people do that. It depends on sort of the culture. So you get into problems both ways. That, you know, at one point, you know, I was in Silver Spring, I was at a rabbi's house for a Shabbos meal. So he offered, I was there, another couple was there, and he offered this couple, which I think was, more recently became from. And the rabbi said, to the husband, you know, would you like to make your own kiddush? He says, sure, why not? So meanwhile, rabbi, I didn't make my own kiddush, so rabbi, you know, there made a beautiful, clear, wonderful kiddush, drank the shir, he knew all the dinim, and this person who wanted to be so frum and make his own kiddush garbled all the words, and, you know, who knows how much he drank, and I think the rabbi made on wine, and he made on grape juice, which is less mehudar. So again, you can get into problems both ways. On the other hand, you know, I was once on a Shabbaton, and we ate by different people. So on Friday night, you know, he seemed to be a regular, you know, balabas. And he asked people in the group, you know, would you like to make your own kiddush? Everyone said no. So he seemed to be talking to him, you know, nothing seemed to be amiss. Started to make kiddush. He could barely hear a single word. Completely, completely garbled.
That's it was why very... NCSY Venture. I'm telling you. That's my guy.
So, in other words, I always assume that somehow like Minhag or something like that, people making their own kiddush. It really is because you're worried that.
People have different reasons.
It's rather insulting, isn't it?
It's to give somebody.
Well, if I had known in advance that this person I just mentioned on the Shabbaton was going to make Kiddush in this manner and I wouldn't barely be able to hear a word, I hope that I at least heard the basic things that are required to be Yotze Kiddush. No one hopes. You know, actually, Rav Schechter's son also happened to be at that meal. So while people were washing, you know, we were sort of conferring with him, like, were we Yotze? Not? Yeah. He says he thinks he heard, you know, the minimum that may be to be Yotze. It's not pasha at all. Again, there are different reasons people want to make their own kiddush. Some people, chassidim, have this thing that they always want to make their own kiddush because they're afraid that they won't be able to pay attention the whole time. Really? Yeah, kiddush is pretty short. Pay attention.
You want to do it yourself. You want to do.
Yeah, but that's not
yourself.
Really correct. Al pi halacha. No. Al pi halacha. More correct is actually not to make your own kiddush because of the din of Barov Am Hadras Melech.
Very
it's considered
nice. Nice.
A greater honor for God the more people are Yotzei a mitzvah at exactly the same time.
Nice.
So therefore, it's really not correct when you have a large crowd. More proper is that one person should make kiddush on behalf of everyone, but not at the expense of not being Yotzei. In other words, if you're afraid that the person, first of all, stam chassidim because of this reason like to make their own kiddush. Other people just stam like to make their own for some reason. But if you're afraid that the person making kiddush is not going to fulfill all the dinim properly, either pronunciation or because he's not going to drink enough, or he's going to use a bidyevah dika beverage for kiddush, so then you should make your own. But it's hard to know in advance. That's the problem. I want to say, you know, a lot of times when people offered me to make their own kiddush, to make my own kiddush, I, you know, obviously it's very rude to answer this, and he wouldn't actually do it, but you kind of want to answer. Well, let me hear yours first, and if I don't like it, then I'll make my own afterwards. I can't decide in advance whether I want to make my own kiddush.
That actually leads to the question I have. In the case that you outlined, you know, you kind of conferred when everybody was washing. I mean, the whole thing about not embarrassing somebody publicly versus
confirm privately.
You know, you have to have some chokhmah. So in such a case, you know, we were, I think, you know, it was a few people there, so I think we're all sort of still in shock, so we didn't really know exactly what to do. But you know, there are ways of doing it. There are ways of doing it. You could say, you know, you could say, oh, I'm so sorry. I feel like I completely spaced out during kiddush. You know, my cat died this past week, and I can't focus. I can't. You know, my mind is really not all there. So you know, I really wasn't paying attention. I'm so sorry. Could I please make my own? There are ways of doing it. There are ways of using chachma to make sure the person won't be insulted, but yet being yosei mitzvah kiddush. Again, it's hard to think on the spot when you're so in shock, but.
Well, you're entitled to assume that the host, if he's going, and as he's going to make kiddush, that he knows how to do it. I mean, you can't.
I wish that were true. That you were all twisted. You know,
yeah, everybody's a BT, in which case.
I don't think this. You know, there's no guarantee BT or not BT. Some BTs are excellent.
Some people dub them like Elmer Fudd. You know, right. You can't tell what they're saying. You know,
right?
That's why
you don't know what
God
language
made
it is.
The NCSY
veteran. No, but this
was the trot.
I don't know if that would have helped this guy. I mean, it was really.
I've been to shul sometimes. Yeah. Especially some older gentleman is laning, and you wouldn't know whether it's Hebrew or Spanish. What?
Oh, it's a problem.
You know, sometimes somebody makes kiddush for a very large crowd, and it's difficult to hear.
And
if you can't hear, then you have to make your own, or each table has to make its own kiddush. So you should appoint someone with a very strong voice and who knows all the dinim and can pronounce Hebrew properly to make kiddush on behalf of everyone. But more correct again is that one person makes on behalf of everyone.
Did you address whether it's better for a woman to make her own or to ask someone to do it?
What do you mean?
Well, there are a lot of women who, you know, will seek out a man if she's late or whatever. So
no, she can make her own. Okay. Yeah. I mean, in general, when there's a large crowd, so we generally do not have a woman make kiddush on behalf of a mixed crowd of men and women, although technically, halachically, it's permissible, but it's not so batamt.
It's not done.
It's not done. It's not so batamt, you might say. But if a woman comes late to a meal by herself, then it's not, it's perfectly fine for her to make her own kiddush.
There's no man who knows enough to be able to make kiddush. Sounds like a...
Right.
You're talking like the Kavod HaTzibur type thing that by Elias. Not exactly. It's just... I mean, it's the traditional thing to do is that if there's a family... You know, structure where there's a husband and a wife and kids, and so that's the husband's job to make kiddush. That was my wife. Usually, you know, it's also associated that, you know, with especially with the older generation that aren't into these new halachic things. So it was a woman making kiddush by herself was associated with being an almana, being a widow.
Right.
So a woman didn't want to make kiddush because she wanted to hear from her husband. She wanted to take pride in the fact that her husband was there to make for her.
There are families, and some of them not so young either, where the husband makes the kiddush and the woman makes the
matzah. Right. But there's nothing, according to halacha, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just not it's not done. It's not the normal derech of
the Jews to do so. It's becoming less weird. I mean, one sees it more than one used to.
Yeah.
Well, when girls pay their